Good afternoon. This is the professor, Dr. Ron Daniels, president of the Institute of the Black World, 21st Century, and distinguished lecturer emeritus from York College, City University of New York, welcoming you to this November 14th post-election. Somehow the red-orange wave didn't materialize edition of Vantage Point. Here on 99.5 FM, that's WBAI, on the Pacifica Network with in collaboration with YCRadio.org. That's right, the York College radio community is plugged in. Had a nice exchange with one of the professors recently who listens in all the time from York College, which expands our voice. Well, today we're going to not talk about the election per se. We're going to talk about the crises in Haiti. We're also going to talk about one of the most significant, the decisive battle that was won by Haitian revolutionaries, the Haitian Pan-African freedom fighters, to achieve the victory that produced the first black republic. So our topic today is celebrating the Battle of Vertes, and if I'm not pronouncing that right, my guests will correct me shortly. We'll have a vignette about that, and then the crisis in Haiti, which way forward for the first black republic. Our guest joining us momentarily will be Jocelyn McCollum, my longtime friend, an ally and consultant on all things Haiti. He is the CEO of JMC Strategies, a human rights advocate and Haiti expert. And delighted to also have Miss Monique Kleska, who is the spokesperson for the Montana Accords. And if you don't know what that is, you should, and you will soon find out about it. Before we go to our guest, however, I just want to again, thank WBAI for carrying the very, very powerful and inspirational town hall meeting last Thursday on the state of Black America and the Pan-African world in the wake of the midterm elections. We had an incredible conversation. It was really, really, really powerful. Now, and WPFW, of course, carried in. There were many, many other outlets as well. Now, in case you missed it, you should not have missed it, or if you want to share it with others, because we're finding that people are actually doing that, you can go to the website ibw21.org. That's ibw21.org. In fact, you should be going there to sign up anyway. There are the next big piece, the State of the Black World Conference 5, State of the Black World Conference 4 in Newark was supported by WBAI and WPFW as media partners. We'll be coming to them both again because we have a huge piece coming up in April of 2023. And so, again, go to the website ibw21.org. In case you missed the town hall meeting, you can find a link to review it, and then you can also share it with friends from around the country and indeed around the world. And of course, we're looking for people to become friends and advocates for IBW to help organize and indeed mobilize for State of the Black World Conference 5, which will be in Baltimore, the theme of which will be Africans, Global Africans Rising, Empowerment, Healing, and Reparations. Reparations and Healing will be the topic for that very, very crucial, very, very powerful State of the Black World Conference 5, looking to mobilize 1,000 people. These are 1,000 people who will be registered. We always have free town hall meetings and other events which are free, which usually are attended by nearly thousands of others who attend, because we always make sure there are free activities to meet with some of the stellar people who will be joining with us. So again, you can go to ibw21.org. Well, now we want to turn our attention, if we have our guests ready to go, to our conversation about Haiti. As many of you know, for years and years and years, Haiti is near and dear to my heart. First delegation to Haiti in 1995, which we founded the Haiti Support Project. I've lost track of the number of times that I've actually participated have actually participated in delegations to Haiti at this point. It's been many, many, many delegations over the years. And in fact, we have also taken people to the Citadel, and many of those trips were advertised and talked about on WBAI as well. We're looking to, I understand, connect with one of our guests. I am so battle fatigued that the last week we had a one number missing in terms of the person we were reaching out to. I just reached out to him this morning to confirm that we would be calling him. And I'm going to double check my sheet to see whether or not we have the number right. And the number I have on my sheet comports with the number that I have in my book. So hopefully Jocelyn McCullough will be joining us very, very shortly. If not, we are going to proceed with our very, very special guest who is joining us. But it would be great if Jocelyn McCullough were joining us as well, because we are devoting our entire show today to Haiti. Haiti, the first black republic. I often say that Haiti gave us back our dignity when we were on our knees. And we all owe a special debt to Haiti that indeed no one or in the African, in the Pan-African world will be truly free until Haiti is genuinely liberated. And as we speak today, it is not. It has been marginalized and stigmatized for centuries, actually. And the current crisis in some ways has to be seen within that context. So we are ready now. I understand Jocelyn McCullough has joined us. And so let us proceed. Again, I want to welcome to the show Jocelyn McCullough. Johnny, welcome to Vantage Point.
I'm glad to be here, Ron.
All right. And Ms. Monique Kleska, are you there?
Yes, I am. Thank you very much. Thank you.
All right. Well, let's plunge right in. Let me just say that we have plenty of time for this conversation. Usually we do maybe 30 minutes and we open the phone to the audience. But to me, this is so important, so crucial, that I wanted to have two guests and to give you plenty of time to, and I'll be sharing with you and working with you on this, to really, really talk about Haiti. And the first place I wanted to start was with the Haitian Revolution itself and the incredible victory that was achieved on November 18th, if I'm recalling it correctly. And that may be a good entry point to talk about the Haitian Revolution. And so, Johnny, I'm going to turn to you first about what transpired on December 18th, to give sense people a sense of the battle. And I'm going to listen to you pronounce it, because I probably have not been pronouncing it correctly. But anyway, you're on.
All right. Thanks, Ron, for first of all inviting me to be part of this broadcast and to talk about Haiti both in historical fashion as well as respect to the current Haiti crisis. November 18, 1803 was a date in which one of the most formidable battles for independence took place in the colony of Saint-Domingue. Just for the sake of information of your readers, before Haiti became Haiti on January 1st, 1804, it was a colony of the French Empire. It was known as Saint-Domingue, and essentially, without going into a lot of details, it was one of the richest colonies in the New World. It produced sugarcane in abundance, and it basically allowed for a lot of the French cities that you know of as, for example, wine country cities, such as Bordeaux, to become as wealthy as possible, because they both integrated, they both were involved in not only the slave trade, but also in importing a lot of products from the colony of Saint-Domingue. And so the colony was one of the richest colonies. But in 1791, and in the wake of the French Revolution itself, which took place in 1789, people in the colony began agitating for independence, began agitating for freedom, for equality, in line with the aims of the French Revolution in 1789, but which was denied to them. So in 1791, the slaves, there were about 500,000 slaves in the colony at the time, and that's compared to about 40,000 French colonizers that had settled in the colony. So there was a huge slave population. They many of them decided to start a rebellion. So in 1791, they started a rebellion, and out of that rose one of the foremost leaders of that revolution, named Toussaint Louverture. There were obviously other people who came in his wake, but he was the foremost leader of the Haitian Revolution in 1791, took control of the revolution and brought it to a point where he had essentially become governor of the colony in 1801. But unfortunately, Napoleon Bonaparte was a deeply racist leader in France, decided that he was going to restore slavery in the colony, and sent about one of the largest military forces to regain control of the colony in 1801. They did regain control of the colony, essentially tricked Toussaint Louverture into agreeing to a dinner, and then basically spirited him and his family off to France, where he died eventually. But that was an indication to all the other leaders of the revolutionary movement that they better secure independence for themselves. So out of that rose Jean-Jacques Dessalines and Henri Christophe and so forth, and all, and these led to the revolution. 1803 was the defining battle in which basically the French said, "Okay, we give up. You know, we can't vanquish you. We can't restore slavery. We are going to leave the colony and essentially allow you to control it and run it as you wish." Mm. So Haiti became independent on January 1st, 1804.
And the name of the battle, because I want to make sure I want to hear the pronunciation.
It's Vertiere. Let me spell it for you. It's V-E-R-T-I-E-R-E-S.
Vertiere.
Vertiere.
Okay, well, I just wanted to make sure I was pronouncing it correctly. Let me just also back up a little bit, because I really have obviously, well, I'm a historian in the political sciences as well, but I have really, really just dug as deeply as I can, not as deeply as I will hopefully do eventually, but I often go back to 1791, because I believe that there was a spiritual powerful force rooted in the sort of the worldview of Africans, which really propelled Africans to victory, because it was noted that by the French forces that it just seemed that the enslaved Africans simply would not die, or they would not give up. They would keep coming and coming and coming. And I believe in that ceremony at Wakaima that the so-called voodoo priestess, Bukman, I think that ceremony really empowered the Africans, the Pan-African Africans, I say, the revolutionaries, to really, really take on the mighty army of Napoleon Bonaparte in a way that I think the French were just astounded of the just the courage and sort of the tenacity of these enslaved Africans, which eventually led, of course, to the first Black Republic. So I just wanted to drop that note in. I don't know if you want to sort of further comment on it, but I always like to add Buchmann to the equation.
Well, I think what I want to add is and emphasize that it was Africans in the New World, you know, right, that made it possible for Haiti, you know, to be created and to become the newest independent democratic republic in the Western Hemisphere. And I think that has not been sufficiently acknowledged, that it was an African revolution, you know, in the New World, that occurred in the New World. And because, you know, obviously Haiti was, you know, the new independent country already was surrounded by white supremacists, they tried to not only, you know, make sure that people didn't know that, but also to destroy that new independent country as much as possible. And I think that that's something that, you know, both, you know, Haitians and African Americans and Africans, I mean, that should resonate, you know, frankly, throughout the world today, as we begin to grasp the immensity, or the significance of the revolution. As you mentioned, you know, it was there was a spiritual awakening that occurred, and that Buchmann was crucial in making sure that the spiritual awakening united all of the Africans in the colony, and also the fact is that that spiritual strength continues to remain very strong in the country today.
So, Monique, I want to bring you into the conversation. I want you to just add and contribute to this initial kind of framing and sort of discussion about the battle and the initial achievement of independence and the consequences. Your thoughts, any additional thoughts you'd like to add?
Thank you very much. And thank you also for the invitation. I think I like very much the way Johnny has framed it. And I think there are a few things that I think are very important, because it really, I want to emphasize what you said in the introduction, that it really was a starting point for pretty much the end of colonialism. Not only for African people, as I say, because Haiti, when Haiti became independent, Haiti also helped Latin America become independent, Colombia, Peru, Venezuela, because Simon Bolivar came to Haiti and asked for help. So colonialism also was in Latin America. So that was a starting point for those countries also, which got help, and Haiti gave money and gave arms. And it sent a huge signal also to Africa, even though African countries, it lasted quite a long time for them to really start having their independence. But they remember it. And Haiti is celebrated, and Haiti is recognized as that. As a matter of fact, my 15-year-old grandson told me in the movie Wakanda, who apparently is in theaters now, breaking box office numbers, Haiti is mentioned, and Toussaint Louverture is mentioned also. So it is an important historical marker for the world. And I think that is something that is important. And on the downside, one of the things that I think one has to realize is that battle of November 18th, 1803, is totally silenced in France. I remember when my son was little, he got a French magazine and actually argued with me. It was a magazine that had Napoleon. And I said, well, let me see November 18th, because we gave them that battle we won. And my son said, but mommy, no, there is no such battle. And so in the history of France, it is silence to this day. So I think it is important what you're doing to not silence it here, and hopefully it will not be silenced elsewhere also. Those are the good things I wanted to add to what Johnny and you have said. Thank you.
And I wish to, that both Johnny, you, and Monique, but also speak to the role of women, because we know of Toussaint Louverture, Dessalines, Bouchman, Pétion, Henri Christophe. We know about the men. We hear about the men all the time. But my understanding is that women played an extraordinarily significant role in the Haitian Revolution. So I wonder whether we just take a minute to talk about that.
I don't know if Johnny wants to go perhaps after me, but yes, absolutely. There were women like Sanit Belair who were there. There was a Défilé who was there. There were quite a lot of women. Even the flag, it is said that a Défilé, first of all, who was there, who brought the knife and the huge pig there during the ceremony where Bouchman was there. And then the flag was actually done in Arcaye by a woman, which, and the name escapes me now. And so there were women who very much participated in there. And another thing is a lot of anonymous women, because don't forget, you know, war, it's like perhaps they are, the men are in the front, but the ones who are organizing, a lot of the intelligence, a lot of the food, a lot of the logistics usually behind war efforts are carried out by women also.
Yes.
And I think that is something that is extremely important to bring out. So yes, the women were there, and the women continue to be there. And I think one word that really kind of, it transcends this whole history and brings us to today is really resistance. Because people often talk about resilience, but I don't like that word resilience. I really prefer the word resistance.
Yes.
And Haiti was born out of resistance. And if and when you bring us to today, that is the continuous link to from that period that Johnny talked about so eloquently to today, resistance to occupation, resistance to enslavement, resistance to just, you know, having no rights and standing for ourselves. And I think that is a key word that I wanted to bring into the conversation.
All right, Johnny, any additional comments about the role of women you'd like to just contribute?
I think that Monique has basically said it all. I mean, I just want to emphasize and perhaps repeat, you know, that to a great extent, I mean, the war against colonialism required that every available force, every available body be, you know, sort of ready to take part in the process. And waging war is not just, you know, shooting a weapon. Waging war means that you have to be able to plan for the battles, making sure that the people are going to be fed and rescued and the wounded be taken care of. And so a lot of the people who are, you know, involved in this part of the struggle, you know, are in fact, you know, people whose qualities and skills are usually, unfortunately, not taken into account because, you know, we have a, the world has a sort of fascination with guns. Whereas, you know, the kind of love that pushes some people, you know, to sort of take part in the battle, you know, for liberty and freedom and so forth, has really not been sufficiently accounted for. So I mean, I think that I don't have much more than that to add to what Monique has said.
Yeah, I just wanted to
I just wanted to add, the name has come back to me, Catherine Flon. Is a name that is important because she's the one who's credited with having sown the flag. And the legend has it that the white of the French flag was removed. And so she sewed together the blue and the red parts for the Haitian flag. So it is Catherine Flon.
And the Haitian flag to me is, you have flags and then there are flags. I think the Haitian flag is, to me, is one of the most beautiful and significant flags of any nation in the world. And I don't mean that in a chauvinist way. It has character. It has different elements in it. And I just think it's just an incredible flag. To our listening audience, our guests today are Jocelyn McCullough, who is a longtime friend, but also is the CEO of JMC Strategies, a human rights advocate and Haiti expert. And we're delighted he was able to bring on with him Ms. Monique Kleska, who is the spokesperson for the Montana Accord. And we're going to be talking about that Montana Accord shortly. We've just really wrapped up a vignette on one of the decisive battle, that in fact led to Dissalane being able to declare the first Black Republic on January 1st in 1804. And it's already been alluded to, Haiti has never, ever been sort of forgiven for shattering the myth of white supremacy at the height of the propagation of the myth of white superiority and, of course, the growth of colonization throughout this hemisphere. And so Haiti's been marginalized and stigmatized and invaded over and over again, including by the United States and the interference in Haiti's affairs. Haiti's a relatively young democracy, and it's important to emphasize that. It's a young democracy or striving to become a democracy, and it's been interfered with in that process. So, Johnny, I want to now set the stage for the immediate crisis, because there have been lots of crises, but this one seems to have great challenges and obstacles, but I believe it also has great opportunities. And so we so thank you for being a member of the Pan-African Unity Dialogue. You've come and you've shared with us in our meetings what's happening on the ground. It's been difficult to listen to because it's very painful. But you've provided the kind of insights that are important for people to understand what the crisis is all about. And then we're going to ask Monique to come forward and talk about the promise. So if you could, I know it's difficult to do it succinctly, but there are some really, really harsh conditions on the ground that the people are facing. And I wish you would just sort of lay the groundwork in that way.
Well, I'm going to try, but I first wish to basically warn your audience that, you know, the Haiti crisis that has sort of hit the newsprint and the social media, you know, has been long in the making, and it's not something that has just surfaced, you know, just this year, but it's something that has essentially triggered a little bit more of the attention of the United States and Canada and France and the United Nations and the Organization of American States, because, you know, to some extent, I mean, they have been, you know, somewhat responsible for that crisis to evolve to such a point that it is becoming a nightmare for the people living in Haiti. I mean, and let me describe a little bit about that nightmare. Right now, it is estimated that about 60% of the country is under the control, or if not under the control, being in a situation where criminal activities and criminal gangs loosely or strongly organized, operating, basically setting the stage for control of property and wealth and so on and so forth. That has not happened without the consent, I would say, of the Haitian government. The Haitian, and when I speak of the Haitian government, I speak of a Haitian government that has its roots in the what I call the skinhead party, coming into office in 2010. Unfortunately, that skinhead party came into office in 2010, was ushered into government thanks primarily to the works of Bill and Hillary Clinton in 2010, fraudulent elections held that ushered in, fellow who prided himself as being a badass singer, otherwise known as Sweet Mickey. His name was Michel Martelly. His government, he ran the country for about 5 years and succeeded him. He chose his successor, Jovenel Moïse, who was unfortunately assassinated last year in circumstances that although Haitian human rights groups have essentially detailed what happened during the assassination, but still the United States and others are basically saying, we still have no idea what happened. And what happened included at least a dozen mercenaries from Colombia, a few Haitians and Haitian Americans being part of a plot, a few members of the Haitian police force being part of a plot to take over the government and get rid of Mr. President Jovenel Moïse. So that the United States is basically saying, we have no idea what happened, and we're still trying to figure it out. It seems to many people to be, a cop-out. Mm-hmm. In any case, what's going on right now in Port-au-Prince has been essentially I don't know what Monique would describe it as, but it's sort of a situation in which people are afraid for their safety, for their lives. Kidnappings are rampant. Killings are many. People are being displaced from their neighborhoods and basically camping out in open spaces because they have nowhere to go. School children cannot go to school at this point, and normal business activities are not taking place. I mean, it's only recently, for example, that the gas stations have been able to refuel to provide gasoline to people, to consumers. For the past 2 or 3 months, has been extremely difficult to get gas into your car. The other thing I would say is that to a certain extent, the government is being ruled by somebody who took over power, who was, as Haitian would say, was essentially appointed by the UN representative in Haiti last year. There was no consultation with Haitians. And Haitians have been dead set in saying, we do not want, to be remotely controlled by the UN or the United States or anybody else. We want to make sure that we are able, to set the tone of what we want to do without this kind of negative interference from the international community. So, obviously, there are many more things that I could say about this, but frankly, I guess
it's a good segue because I just wanted people to get a sense of the conditions, which are really, really, really horrific. I've read one report where one of the gang leaders ordered the outright assassination of one of the high-level police commissioners, may have been the police commissioner himself, in church. I mean, it was just terrifying. I can imagine the trauma. And of course, this is the way, you know, sometimes gangs operate, to terrorize people in that manner. But in the middle of that, or not in the middle of that, but in this, there's been a process going on that, again, I began to do work in Haiti in 1995 and have been involved in some efforts around mediation and crisis resolution and all those things. As you're aware, Johnny, but I must say that what Malik is about to talk about to me is very promising. And I can say without fear of a contradiction that Congressman Gregory Meek, who is the head of the House Foreign Relations Committee, agrees. But he also agrees that it has to be done by the Haitian people and that the U.S. government and others must follow and not meddle and lead. So, Malik, what is this Montana Accord? What is it about? How did it come about? And again, sort of, what is its promise? Because I just think that what you were doing and the people on the ground are doing is so incredibly crucial and promising that it's important to share it so that our listening audience knows about it and that we can gather as much momentum and support for it as possible.
Thank you. Thank you very much. And I do believe indeed that it is a promise. I wanted to add just a couple of things to what Johnny has said and ease in and to the promise, in that the latest crisis really started with riots in July 2018. And during those riots, youth started asking for health care, education, jobs, professional training. So it really, there is a linkage there between the social justice movement, because that's what it started. So I think it is important to mention that, because many think that it is a political crisis, and it is also a security crisis, but it also is a social justice crisis that is linked with deep inequalities. For you who have been to Haiti numerous times, you must know that Haiti is one of the most unequal societies around. Another point I wanted to add in terms of what Johnny has said is the government of Haiti for the last 10, 11 years. Johnny talked about Michel Martelly, and he talked about Jovenel Moïse, and today there is Ariel Henry, and he talked about the Skinhead Party. But what is significant is it really is totally linked. It is, in fact, almost a criminal organization. And I think it is something that is important to see. The governance system has become criminal. And during Jovenel Moïse's reign, there were 13 massacres. And one of them was actually just a few days before November 18th, 2018. So, you know, the November 18th, linkage, I think, is important to note there. And in the last year that Ariel Henry has been there, there have been at least 4 massacres and gang rapes. Women are not only gang raped, they're raped in front of their children and in front of their husbands. So I wanted to bring those two elements there, the social justice aspect, as well as the governance system that is basically run almost like a criminal organization.
Right.
And so in 2021, last year, in early 2021 when the crisis became security, political, and everything else, then civil society groups started saying to themselves, you know what? The politicians have not been able to find a solution. What if we started to think about a solution? What if we started to put people together from various civil society groups and try to imagine a solution? And the word, the promise that you use, I think falls into that category. And so that's what they did. A civil society forum was held in January 2021, and various organizations were contacted, various sectors were contacted, different church denominations, the Voodoo sector, Episcopalian Church, the Protestant Church, the diaspora, and so put together a commission. And I am one of the members of that commission. And what we did when we got together was say to ourselves, let us go on a kind of listening tour. Let us listen to what Haitians from the diaspora, from different sectors in Haiti, as well as every political party has to say. Let's ask them all kind of three questions. What is it that you see as the crisis? What is it that you see as the kind of governance system that we should have? And what is it that you see in the short, medium term as solutions for Haiti? And based on all of that, we sat down with different people, lawyers, a political scientist, etc., and then developed what has become known as the Montana Accord, which has the official name of the August 30th Accord, because we workshopped it even before we actually had it for signature. And when we presented it on August 30th, 2021, from then up until late last year, we had about 1,000 signatories from the various organizations, as well as individuals, personalities who have signed the accord. And the accord, in terms of I've explained the process to you, and this is what it is, it really comes in two parts. One part is the governance part, where the idea is, let us then have a two-year transition period from this kind of criminal gang, in a way, that has been in power for 11 years, so that we can, at the end of that two-year period, be able to organize safe, clean, democratic elections. And that is a governance system also that is ethical, that does not practice, put his hands in corruption. And that is one of the promises of the Montana Accord in terms of the governance. And the second part is the part about the social justice, that it is important that certain major protest needs, because people protested, they wanted things, they wanted their rights to be fulfilled. And it was important during that transition period that some major initiatives could be held so that we could push forward some of those rights being fulfilled there. And so people could have space so that they could express all of these things, so that there could be a national conference for Haitians to be able to speak to each other. So underlining all of this is the fact that one of the major problems we have is the mistrust. So the idea of dialogue as a way forward, the idea of consensus, hearing everybody and trying to find the least common denominator so that we can have that kind of an accord. And the idea that Haitians in Haiti and Haitians in the diaspora also participate, because, you know, one could say, why Haitians in the diaspora? Well, because Haitians in the diaspora, most of them have never cut ties to Haiti.
Right.
And one of the things that is extremely important, Haitians in the diaspora send millions and millions and millions of dollars to Haiti to sustain their families. So not only do they have a financial take, but there is an emotional linkage also. So these are the things that constitute the Montana Accord. And we have been, taking it to various different publics, whether it's throughout Haiti, not as much as we could have, not as much as we should have, but we have started to do this, particularly Jérémy, Jacmel, et Port-de-Paix. Et we have different committees even set up there for the Montana Accord, in the diaspora also. And so this is what it is. It is a struggle also to assert our sovereignty. Because one of the things that Johnny mentioned is powers that be, for example, it was the Clintons, really, who put Martelly in power, and then the UN and the U.S. put Ariel Henry in power. So we are in a struggle so that what we Haitians want, what we Haitians can do, be at the forefront, so that we can dialogue with each other, so that we can assert our sovereignty. And it's going to be extremely difficult because the international community, and particularly the white folks out there, have really seen Haiti as their backyard, as their front yard, as their side yard. And so the struggle, the resistance we are into is really so that we can affirm our sovereignty, assert our sovereignty, so that we can establish equal relationships with those countries who are dominating us. I don't have an issue with saying it, but we are in the resistance so that we can fight against that. And this is what we have been doing really for a year and a half. And I think we have made some inroads. So if you allow, you know, I will stop there. But at a certain point, I would love to talk about some of the inroads that we have made beyond what I've talked about.
Well, we certainly want to do that, though we are now, we have like 6 minutes. So this is new. Well, we can always do a sequel, because I think it was important, I think, to get the historical background in, and I think the current conditions in. But I also just wanted to go hit at a couple of points that I think are crucial. And that is this idea that any election will do in the name of democracy. I mean, this is, and I have pushed back myself against this in some of these elections, and they're not as inclusive as just hold elections, you know, and then having had elections, then all of a sudden, I mean, there's supposed to be some miraculous change. And of course, you know, this speaks to a kind of callousness at best, giving it, and at worst, just a kind of utter disrespect for the Haitian people. And I say that because there is this whole thing about elections, election, elections. But what I hear clearly is that there is a need in Haiti for a period in which, and I think it was 2 years that was outlined, so that real elections can take place based on the real input of the Haitian people. Is that correct? Is that what I'm hearing?
Yes, that is exactly what you're hearing. Because one of the things that has happened as this white domination as the international community has really kind of taken over that has happened, is that Haitians, they have kind of lost trust in the electoral process. For example, in 1991, there were close to 80% of Haitians of voting age who actually participated. With Jovenel Moïse, it was 18%. So Haitians are saying, well, what's the use of me even going to participate, because it doesn't even matter who I vote for, because you're the one who is going to decide. The U.S. will decide. The U.N. will decide. So the idea now is to level the playing field so that Haitians can, you can build the trust again, so that we can really assert that sovereignty, so that Haitians can go to the polls and actually say, yes, my vote counts. And then there is another element. The conditions, the security conditions that Johnny described, were close to 60% of the metropolitan Port-au-Prince is held by criminal organizations. How can you have elections?
Absolutely.
You cannot have elections in such a climate.
That's right.
You can't even go to the bank. You can't go to a gas station. So how can you have elections? So we really need to level the playing field there, so that if and when we go to elections, they are safe elections. Not only will they be democratic and will they mean something to everyone, but that they will be safe. So we need that climate of security in Haiti, and there is no way that that can be established right now, you know? There is no way. So we really need that two-year transitional period so
right.
that we can get back to a certain normalcy that will allow for proper, free, nonviolent, and democratic elections to be held.
Well, let me also say that I think the other critical part of it is that elections in and of themselves are, elections are fine, but the key issue that you have struck on to me, and I'm now theorizing from my own perspective, is participation. The civic engagement and the involvement of the people, hearing the voice of the people, and people having a stake in the process is far more important than the election in and of itself and by itself. In fact, the failure to include people is what often creates initialist excitement, and then there's kind of a sense of alienation, and because it's just, oh, the election's over. I mean, it is the participation, and I hear the Montana Accord process being an idea of going to the people, speaking to the people, engaging the people, and it seems to me that institutionalizing ways in which that happens is another very, very promising part of the equation. Well, let me just say that we will have to extend this process. Let me just commit to continuing to air these issues, but also in my interaction with the Congressional Black Caucus and civil rights and human rights organizations in this country, continue to push for the Montana Accords being respected and the movement being respected, and to compel the U.S. government to be in alignment with the wishes of the Montana Accord and the Montana Agreement, because that is exactly, it seems to me, where we need to be aligned. I'm really out of time. I only got like 30 seconds, but this has been a rich conversation. We will continue it as we go down the line. And Johnny, you, of course, have been a great liaison. And of course, Monique, we really appreciate your vision and your courage for doing the work that you do. And but again, you can count on we and the Institute of the Black World 21st Century and the Haiti Support Project to continue to be advocates and supporters as we move forward. So I have to thank you for being with us this afternoon on WBAI.
Thank you. Yeah, thank you.
All right. Well, we could have gone much longer, but we'll come back. And I hope you found this an informative program on Haiti. That's right, the first back of the crisis in Haiti and how to move forward with the first Black Republic. This is the Professor. We'll see you again next week here on Vantage Point.
waste.